Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you? It's U.S. Open, Brooke Henderson won. You couldn't be better. Hello, Fred. Fred.
Am I there now?
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, you're there. Now you're there. Now we have Fred. How are you, Fred?
Oh, you didn't have me before? I'm sorry. Yes, I am excited, Carlos. I spent the day here at the Open here at Oakmont. Was on the range watching some players, listening to some interviews. I'm going to recap some of those after a bit. And pretty exciting stuff. Going to be here today, tomorrow, and catch the first round on Thursday before I head back home. But, you know, I'm still all on Twitter about the fabulous finish at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Sahara last weekend. What a display by the kids, Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, and Arias Jutanugarn, with all three under par and bogey-free on Sunday. Oh, yeah. There was another major championship held in golf last week on the Champions Tour, and we have one of the biggest golf tournaments in the world to talk about tonight, the 116th U.S. Open from Oakmont. What a show, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go, and like you mentioned, we have a lot to talk about. We also have legendary head pro there at Oakmont, Bob Ford. We have an interview with him. He'll be our VIG. Plus, we have entertainment and sports lawyer, sports commentator and entertainment lawyer Jake Lima with us, a short interview as well during the U.S. Open preview. But we're going to start with the weekend backswing, and, of course, we have to start with the big one this past weekend. It was in the women's LPGA where Brooke Henderson topped Lydia Ko. But, Fred, you have all the details about it.
I do. At 18 years, 9 months, Brooke Henderson became the second youngest women's major championship winner by beating the youngest women's major championship winner ever, Lydia Ko, in a playoff. Ko was 18 years, 4 months old when she won the 2015 Evian Championship last year. And, of course, she added the ANA already this year. Ko is 4 months older than Henderson, and together they put on a show for the ages at Sahali Country Club outside of Seattle. Henderson, playing 2 groups ahead of Ko, shot a final round 65 and made 5 miles of putts to stay bogey-free. She made a 90-foot putt from off the green for an eagle, and the long par save she made on the last hole to post minus 6 and become the leader in the clubhouse can be ranked with Tiger Woods' famous birdie putt on the 72nd hole of the 2009 U.S. Open to catch Rocco Media and force a playoff and retire the eventual 14th major win. 20-year-old Arias Jutanugarn, not a teenager anymore, but still only 20, a winner in her previous 3 starts, also added some spice with a final round 66 to close within 1 shot of the playoff by making birdies on number 16 and number 17, but came up 1 short when she missed her birdie putt at number 18. Ko was trying to win her 3rd consecutive major title, something only 4 other women golfers have ever accomplished. She did nothing wrong. She held the lead after 54 holes and fired a nearly perfect bogeyless 4 under par 67, hitting fairways and greens just like you're supposed to do. The fact is that Henderson just played a little bit better with her own bogey-free 65 to force the playoff. And then, in the playoff, Carlos, in the playoff, Ko hit a great drive. Henderson hit a great drive. Ko hit her second shot first. She hit it right to the middle of the green, just like she always does. It was a beautiful thing. You know, she's got a birdie putt, although long from the middle of the green. But Henderson, no middle of the green stuff for me. I'm going for the flag. And she went right for the flag. It was a thing of beauty. This was golf at the highest level. It was done by a couple of girls, Carlos. If that's playing like a little girl, I want some of that. Brooke Henderson also aced the par 3 13th early in the week and gave the car she won to her older sister, who also doubles as her caddy, Brittany. Brittany, no slouch on the golf course herself, could be playing on the Canadian Women's LPGA, but has put her golf career on hold because she's having so much fun traveling around with her little sister and looking forward to being involved in the Olympics. Speaking of which, the women's golf portion with Ko, Henderson, Jutanagarn, Lexi Thompson, and the South Koreans, that might just be get to be an exciting event after all, Carlos. Did you know that Brooke Henderson was a star hockey goalie and passed on a spot on the Canadian women's hockey team? She also turned down a full scholarship to the University of Florida to play golf for the Gators. Looks like she made the right decision. Brooke has had a phenomenal golf career thus far. She won the Canadian Women's Amateur as a 15-year-old, was runner-up in the U.S. Women's Open the following year, and finished top 10 at the 2014 U.S. Women's Open as an amateur. When she turned professional and began 2015 with no status, she promptly won on the Sumatra Tour, finished top 5 in the last year's KPMG Women's PGA and U.S. Women's Open before winning in Portland to earn full-time status on the LPGA Tour. She's not missed a cut this year in 14 starts, Carlos. Posted 9 top 10s prior to this win. She has quickly become one of the most dominant players on the LPGA, and she jumped over Lexi Thompson and Envy Park to the number 2 spot on the Rolex rankings. Number 2, Carlos. The top 2 are teenagers on the Rolex rankings. Remember, Henderson has accomplished all this in basically a little over 1 year. A side note here to the KPMG Women's PGA is that Envy Park played through pain to her invite to the Hall of Fame. Although she missed the cut by 2 shots on Friday night, she did post 72-79 playing with a very sore thumb that has restricted her play for several weeks. Of earning a spot among the greatest golfers of all time after just 10 years on tour, she said, "I dreamed of myself being up there," she said, "but this is surreal. I just have to keep playing." All in all, Carlos, the KPMG Women's PGA was a home run for the LPGA, the PGA, KPMG, Sahali, and women's golf in general.
I can tell you this. You cannot leave outside there Adia Jutanagarn as well, because this looks like it's going to be the big three on the women's side. And I was just very excited when I saw the shot, when I saw Brooke Henderson shot that approach on the playoffs, on that first playoff hole. I mean, her look, I don't know if you saw that face. It was like, I know, I got this. I mean, she knew she was so calm, cool, collected. And when she hit it, she was like, I know, I got this. And the ball was so close, she just knew she was going to win. I cannot explain it. It was so incredible, that confidence that Brooke at 18 is showing, Lydia Ko 19, and Aria 20. This could be the big three, really, on the LPGA. What you think?
I love watching Brooke Henderson play golf, Carlos. I was excited about her last year. We talked about her from the beginning of the year last year. We knew she was going to be a really special player right from the beginning, and she had a phenomenal year last year. You know, Jordan Spieth-like, Tiger Woods-like. I mean, it's right up there with the great years of all time that she had last year. I got to watch her play in the qualifier for the Marathon Classic last year. She missed it by 1 shot, but she was in the middle of crisscrossing the country by car, and I don't think she was quite as sharp as she could have been because of just a lot of demand. It was the Monday after she finished top 5 in the U.S. Women's Open here in Pennsylvania. She'd driven back to Toledo that night, played the next day. There was a rain delay off and on, and it was just draining for her, I think, or she would have qualified for that. I watched her play some other times also, and up at Ann Arbor I watched her a little bit, and she's just She is really a great player. I can't wait till she gets to Toledo. I'm going to try and get an interview with her. We're going to talk to her a little bit. So I'm really high on Brooke Henderson. I like her a lot, Carlos.
We'll see. Well, let's talk now about the PGA Tour. And let me tell you one thing. Maybe it's because he didn't get invited to spring break. Or maybe his friendship with Jordan Spieth has yet to be confirmed. Or maybe he's just less flashy, more stern than his contemporaries. Maybe there's only room for so many phenoms in golf, and he, by process of elimination, gets left out of the conversation. Maybe he's a bit more conventional than Bryson DeChambeau. Oh, well, we all are. But anyway, whatever the reason may be, Daniel Berger has flown under the radar over the last season and a half, despite taking home the PGA Tour main pieces of hardware in 2015. He was named Rookie of the Year after claiming six top tens, including 2 seconds. But he was missing a victory, something so many of his young rivals had in their trophy cases already. Berger is 23, and he finally added hardware this weekend. He won the FedEx St. Jude Classic following a 3-under round of 67. Berger once again has quietly gone about his business in 2016. Part of the reason for his lack of fanfare was a brutal mid-season stretch that threatened to derail his 2015 campaign. He missed 7 consecutive cuts from the Memorial to the Barclays. Somehow, the Florida State grad rebounded when it counted the most, if we consider that the young man's pocketbooks, right? But he threw rally to finish 12th at the Tour Championship and set the tone for seasons to come. So far, Berger has produced more consistent results this year, 8 top 25s in 17 events. He claimed T10 at Augusta in April, then followed with a T9 at the Players. But on Sunday, Berger matched his Memorial finish, 67 on the course. It was a challenging day as well. Not only did the weather throw a wrench into the schedule, forcing players to speed up play to beat the darkness, but Berger faced deep competition from more heralded names. There was the U.S. Open hopeful Dustin Johnson firing a 63 to add to the suspense, then Steve Stricker and Phil Mickelson, they pairing with a combined age of 94. The team turned back the clock with the season's second major just ahead, and they too matched Berger's 67 to tie for second. It was a good tournament for FSU, let me tell you, because it also in second place was Berger's one-time Seminoles teammate Brooks Koepka. Fred, while Brooke Henderson at 18 and Lydia Ko at 19 duel on the LPGA Tour, of which you already reported, you know, youth was served once again on Men's Circuit, and maybe it's time to start paying attention to Daniel Berger, too.
You know, he also moves up there to number 12 in the Ryder Cup points list. So if he can just have another couple pretty good events here through the rest of summer, maybe in the majors or something, you know, I think I told you to put him down. He's going to be on the team. I think he's going to be a really good player, yeah. Hey, Carlos, there was a second major championship last weekend. I don't know if you realize that or not, but the Champions Tour, there was another one, yeah. Nobody was talking about it, but there was a second major. Bernhard Langer, you remember Bernhard Langer? Have you ever heard of him? I seem to recall his name somewhere.
I think he plays.
I've heard his name somewhere. But he made a long putt on the last hole to win his third Constellation Senior Players Championship, his second major championship win this season, and 7th senior major title since joining the Champions Tour in 2007, just in case you're keeping count. Langer won the Traditions in May and also won the Chubb Classic at the beginning of the year in February. Langer's 58 years old. He's an old guy. He's going to turn 59 in August. He's at an age when golfers are supposed to start losing their touch, length, and ability to win against younger players, but he just keeps on going. Doesn't he know what a couch is? You know, where's that remote? He doesn't get it. He now leads the Charles Schwab Cup points list with Woody Austin, a distant second. Austin has, he's barely got half as many points as Langer has, with the season more than half over. If Langer can just get one more regular season win or a couple top 10 finishes at the remaining two majors, he will be the first to to he'll get the Charles Schwab Cup. I mean, he's going to be the first to win it for his fourth time. He's already won it in 2010, 2014, 2015. Oh yeah, he was runner up in 2012 and 2013. Here's an amazing stat for you, Carl. I did a little research, looked some stuff up. In the last 43 senior major championships, so that's, you know, almost 9 years. Since Longer joined the Champions Tour in 2008, he has 33 top tens, including the 7 wins. In his last 13 senior majors, Longer has finished top 10 in every one with 4 wins, and he's only finished outside the top 5 3 of those times. The media is bemoaning the fact that the Champions Tour doesn't have a dominant, recognizable face for the tour, and they try to make a big deal out of John Daly, who weighs like 300 pounds or something and can't play anymore. They may want to turn their attention to someone who is racking up some huge numbers by the name of Bernhard Langer.
And do you think he's going to win? I mean, he has never won it before, you know, but hopefully we'll see if he can hold off. You know, he's never done that. But,
yeah, right. I think he'll make it. But hopefully he doesn't push a button with his thumb while he's riding his bike. You know how he hurt his thumb? He was riding his bike, okay, with his family in Florida. He stopped at one of the poles that has the light on to change the light, you know, the stoplight. He pushed the button to change it so they could cross the street, and he hurt his thumb pushing the button. That's the only thing that stopped this guy, you know, in the last 8 years. He's amazing.
I'll see now some conspiracies trying to get that done again to him. So
you really exactly. They'll be out there with a hammer trying to beat on his thumb.
Hey, there was action also on the European Tour where Ashton Wu, the 30-year-old from China, who last year won the Volvo China Open, he came from a stroke behind to win the Lioness Open in Axenburg in Austria for his second career tour title. Wu shot a 69 in the final round, including 7 birdies, to finish at 13 under 275. He trailed 54-hole leader South African Sander Lombard going into the final round, but he picked up 3 shots on the first 4 holes. He later carded a double bogey in the par 4 10th, but he held on for the victory as Lombard dropped to 5th with a 2-over par 74. And also on the web.com tour, hey, Max Homa, he won the Rust-Oleum Championship in Ivanhoe, Illinois for his second victory, and he closed with a 5-under-67 for 1 stroke victory over Jeff Skeeter and John Malinger, Fred.
Hey, let me give you a quick Curtis Cup summary. The women amateurs played over in Scotland last weekend, and the Curtis team from the U.S. was no match for the Great Britain and Ireland team. Boy, does that sound familiar, a European team beating an American golf team. That's never happened before. And they just went the same way as the Ryder Cup, the Solheim Cup, the Walker Cup, the whole thing. Europe wins. Might as well just give them the trophy before we ever bother going over there. English woman Megan McLaren, 22, delivered the winning point on the 17th hole. McLaren's win in singles ended what had been a valiant American comeback and gave Jeannie and I the 11.5 to 8.5 triumph. She said, "Nothing even comes close to this. This is incredible. I can't even put it into words." McLaren had graduated from Florida International University early in the year. It was only the 3rd GB&I victory in the biennial competition over the last 20 years, 2 of which have come in the Republic of Ireland. GB&I took the 1996 match at Killarney Golf and Fishing Club, then endured a 7-match losing streak to the American before winning again at 2012 at Nairn Golf Club in Scotland. With the Americans putting plenty of victories on the board on the final day, the score had narrowed to just a 2-point margin, 9.5 to 7.5, and the USA was leading in the final match. So it came down to the end, but McLaren sealed the deal, won it for Great Britain and Ireland. Hannah O'Sullivan was on the team for the United States. She's probably the biggest name that anyone will recognize.
She's not in a hurry to turn pro. If you remember, we talked about her before from out there in Arizona. Really good player. She's going to be on the LPGA Tour one of these days. So that's a name you're going to want to watch, Carlos.
And that will wrap up our weekend backswing. We're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we're going to have our Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. So don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, the Center by United Golf Network. And Fred, you're going to take the tee shot, and you're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. What's going on? What do you have for us?
We're not going to talk about Zika tonight. I know how you feel about that. We're not going to talk about the mosquitoes. But the question is Rio ready for the Olympics? Well, Carlos, the short answer for that is no. Golf Digest, Matthew Rudy was in Rio, and he has not returned with good news. There's a lot of stuff going on in Rio, and not much of it is good. Although the Zika virus scare has been getting most of the attention in the media, there's also serious traffic problems, street crime, poor living conditions, and political unrest that may prove to be more serious in nature for the sports fans than visit the 2016 Rio Olympics in August. On the over-congested roads, one could probably walk faster than take a car. It will take over 2 hours to travel 14 miles to some of the Olympic venues. If Flint, Michigan thinks they have water problems, the water in Brazil is completely unsafe to drink or bathe in due to improper sewage concerns. Rio is one of the most genuinely dangerous places you can go. They are announcing that 10,000 Brazilian soldiers will be policing the games. They're going to need them. More than half the city is made up of shanty villages where the poorest live. These people haven't seen much of a benefit from the Olympics coming to Rio. They weren't on the receiving end of the kickbacks Olympic executives received to give the 2016 games to Rio. Only one of the 5 sewage processing plants promised in the bid has been built. Mix that with crime syndicates that are using the games as a strategic lever, kind of blackmail. Leave us alone and we won't attack your tourists if they pay them enough money. If you walk across the street to the beach and you only lose your phone, you've got to consider yourself lucky. While Rudy was in Brazil, the police had a shootout with one of the gangs that ended with a city bus getting set on fire. That didn't even make the news. That was just, you know, old hat. Happens every day. Bottom line, Carlos, it's dangerous to walk around. The water is essentially untreated sewage. The threat from Zika is small but real. Brazil is in the middle of one of the worst economic downturns in 30 years, and the people just impeached their president for corruption. Brazil does not sound like a pleasant place to host an event as large and important as the Olympics to me, Carlos.
We'll see, but it'll be there. It's pretty soon. It's just 54 days out, so and there's nothing.
They're not going to cancel it.
No, no way. No. I think hell will freeze over before that happens. No way. No way. So, anyway, let me tell you also about the UL International Crown. The A teams in next month's event at the Mary Club in Liberty Ville were determined via the world ranks a month ago. On Monday, the 4 players who will compete for each team were unveiled. Players had until Sunday's conclusion of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship in Seattle to get their rankings high enough to win spots on their national teams. There was only minor shuffling after the KPMG event. Amy Yang, she moved into the 4th spot for the Republic of Korea, and Porani Chutikai became Thailand's 4th member. On the team side, Australia passed Chinese Taipei to claim the number 4 seed for the round, which is designed to determine the best women's golfing nation. Korea seems a shoe-in. I mean, with 4 players all ranked in the top 8 in the world, but that's not how Adrian Yutanagar, the top player for the number 6 seed, Thailand sees it. I mean, last week at a Seattle News conference, she declared that Thailand will claim the crown, and she repeated her prediction at Monday's roster announcement at Top Golf in Wooddale. She said, why? Because we have a great team. She said she's one of the 4 players in hand for the announcement, but she was joined there by her sister Moria, who's also on the Thailand team. So she's very confident about this. England's Melissa Reed and China's Chang Chong Fong also were there on hand for the team's announcements. And Yutanagar's prediction drew a rousing cheer from the 20 representatives of the Thailand Consulate of Chicago, who made their presence heard loud and clear throughout the announcement. Adia Yutanagar, who's the longest hitter on the LPGA Tour, has climbed into the team's elite with a number 7 world ranking. She won 3 straight tournaments before finishing 3rd in Seattle, just 1 shot out of the playoffs. The 2 who beat her, well, number 1, Lydia Ko of New Zealand, and Canada's Brooke Henderson, who beat Ko in a playoff for the KPMG title, like Fred reported, they won't be on the crown because two countries didn't qualify. How come the world number 1 and 2 are not going to be there? But neither did Spain, which won the crown during the event's first competition 2 years ago at Case Valley, Maryland. Sweden, which was among the 8 teams at Case Valley, also didn't qualify this time. Instead, England and China will play in the event for the first time at Mary Cloud. The U.S. team will be the number 2 seed. Once the matches begin, the U.S. roster will have 1 change from the crown debut in 2014, and that will be that Jarina Piller is among the 4, and Paula Kramer is out. Piller will join Lexi Thompson, Stacey Lewis, and Chrissy Kerr on the U.S. side. So with Cole and Henderson ineligible, the top ranking player in the crown, Fred, will be Korea Sinbi Park, who is number 3. Thompson is number 4 now.
Is Zimbi going to play? I can't imagine her playing. I thought once she got her, once she got through the KPMG and got her spot in the World Hall, Golf Hall of Fame, I thought she was going to take some time off to try and heal her thumb. But maybe she's going to play. I don't know. But I guarantee you, whether Park plays or not, the South Koreans are going to win this time. There's not going to be a fluke deal. The South Koreans are going to win this time, I promise. So it really doesn't matter who else is in it. They can have Team A and Team B in the Olympics and finish 1 and 2. You know that, right? I mean, they got 8 of the top, 15 or something women in the world are South Koreans that could be on the Olympic team if they took more than 4. Hey, let's talk a little bit about college. Let's talk a little bit about college golf. With the advent of summer and the end of the school year, the annual Collegiate Golf Awards were handed out. University of Texas junior Bo Hostler earned the Haskins Award as the top men's golfer. The award is voted on by players, coaches, and members of the golf media. He joins former Haskins winners such as Tiger Woods. I remember that name. Phil Mickelson, oh, yeah, he's here this week. David DeVault, he's here, but he's in the booth. And Graham McDowell. It's really special to look up and down that list, Hostler said. It's kind of a who's who of professional golf now, and to be in that company is really an honor. It was a particularly tight vote for the Haskins Award. Hostler had the most individual titles with 5, but Arizona State senior John Rahm had the nation's best scoring average. He won 4 events. And he finished inside the top 10 in all 13 events he played in. Plus, Rahm is here this week. He's one of only 2 amateurs that are in the field for the U.S. Open. Rahm had to be satisfied with the Hogan Award, which goes to the best college and amateur golfer, as well as the Nicklaus Award, voted on by college coaches. Rahm also finished the season as the number 1 player in Golfstat's individual rankings. Rahm tied for 3rd at the NCAA Championship, while Hostler played the final 9 holes and 3 over to finish 1 shot behind him. They both played tough schedules, and it was just a really tight boat. Side note, Hostler injured his left shoulder during the semifinals of the NCAAs and did not compete in the final match against Oregon. He said Tuesday that he's going to undergo surgery to repair a torn labrum and is expected to miss at least 4 months. He was going to be turning pro, and so that's going to put that on hold. And, you know, these guys like to turn pro in the summer, get into a few events, trying to earn enough money so they don't have to go to the web.com. But it looks like Hosser is going to end up on the web.com tour next year. So on the women's side, a junior from UCLA, Bronte Law, received the Annika Sorenstam Award as the best female collegiate golfer. Law received the Annika Award after a breakthrough season in which she won 3 events, finished inside the top 10 in 8 of her 10 starts. Law will receive an exemption into this year's Evian Championship in the 5th and final LPGA Tour. That's a pretty good deal. You win that and you get to go to France? Or Switzerland, or wherever that place is. I guess it's France, isn't it? It's right there by Switzerland across a lake or something. But that's pretty good. That's a pretty good prize. Carlos, you got your mute on? Carlos, you there?
Hello, Fred.
Yes, are you there?
Yeah, I have had to apologize to our listeners. There's a problem here on Block Cut Radio today, and we've been having it's a problem with the host of the show. So I am the one that has the one that controls the switchboard here, and they announced before I started to get in that they were having problems. So I'm sorry, it wasn't my fault. It was on Block Cut Radio. They dropped me, so. But I'm back, so I don't know if you finished your story there.
I did finish, yeah. We're ready to go to you. You were going to talk about BJ a little bit, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, we have been talking about his lawsuit and all that stuff that he had, trying to recoup $3 million. Well, he has reached a settlement in his attempt to recoup those $3 million. He claims he was duped into giving his former attorney Nathan Matt Hardwick and his law partners and will receive at least $2 million payment if his settlement agreement is approved by a bankruptcy court. Jensen filed a lawsuit against Hardwick partners Mark Whitstead and brother Jitter Whitstead at their Atlanta-based law firm in October 2014. He initially claimed in the suit that the defendants conspired to bilk him of $3 million with a fabricated investment opportunity to cover shortages in the operating and trust accounts of their firm and an affiliated real estate title company. The shortages were allegedly caused by misappropriations. Hardwick was indicted and arrested by federal authorities in February on multiple charges, including fraud and conspiracy in connection with his alleged theft of more than $20 million from the accounts of Morris, Hardwick, Schneider, and the affiliated Lancaster Title Company. The firm renamed to Morris Schneider Whitstead after Hardwick resigned his positions as CEO of Lancaster and managing partner of the firm in late August 2014, a couple of weeks after Jensen's loan was secured, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection last July. Jensen's settlement is part of that bankruptcy plan that must be approved by the court and will be paid through the law firm insurance policy with Endurance American Specialty Insurance Company. So the payments will be made through a liquidating trust, and creditors have until July 21 to vote to accept or reject the plan. A plan confirmation hearing is expected on August 2nd. Jensen may have an opportunity to recoup his entire $3 million through this settlement. The $2 million payment is part of the $3 million unsecured claim that he's entitled to. His entitlement is in the highest classification of the unsecured claims, but it's part of the more than $19 million in allowed general unsecured claims, which are secondary to the payment of allowed administrative claims, allowed secured claims, and allowed priority claims in the case. Johnson's settlement was reached through mediation that took place on March 15. Johnson's agent, David Winkle of Hamburg Sports Management, said he would have no comment calling the settlement a private matter. So, Fred, as a result of the settlement, Johnson has dropped his 2 lawsuits connected to his loan.
Carlos, I think you ought to get a law degree after reading that. You should just, they ought to give you one. You shouldn't even have to pass the bar after reading all that, after going through all that stuff. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Phil. We like to talk about Phil.
Of course.
Yeah. Who is Gregory Silvera, and what is his connection to Phil Mickelson? Well, Mike Fish wrote for ESPN and suggests Gregory Silvera is an avid golfer who authorities said had ties to offshore gambling. Phil Mickelson, gambling. So have we heard this before? Silvera pleaded guilty last year to 3 counts of laundering funds from an unnamed gambling client of his between February 2010 and February 2013. Well, ESPN's Outside the Lines, citing sources, identified Mickelson as the client. Phil. In court, you know what? If he keeps doing it, he's going to get thrown in jail one of these days. You can't keep doing all this stuff and not get caught sooner or later. In court filings, prosecutors said the gambler had used the 57-year-old Silvera, who lists residents in both the Palm Springs area and San Diego, as a conduit to pay a $2.7 million gambling debt he owed to an offshore sportsbook. Silvera's attorney stated in a subsequent filing that Silvera was friends with a number of individuals who are also avid golfers. And in this instance, he had done a personal favor to an individual who did not wish his wagering activity to become public. He was sentenced to 12 months and one day in prison for transferring nearly $3 million of the pro golfer's money to an illegal gambling operation. How does Phil get out of this? How does he get out of this? If it were me, Carlos, or you, we'd be in jail right now and never get out. According to court documents, in March 2010, Silvera, a participant in an illegal gambling operation which had accepted a place bets of sporting events, accepted a wire transfer of $2.7 million from the gambling client into his Wells Fargo bank account. Anyway, transferred into another, and so they said, okay, that's money laundering, yeah, you're nailed. So Silvera said to the judge during the sentencing, I am the dumbest money launderer that ever existed. I wasn't trying to conceal anything. Carlos, my mother always said, where there's smoke, there's fire. We had the rumors from several years ago when Phil switched from Titleist to Callaway suddenly that Eli Callaway had agreed to pay several million in gambling debts for Phil to get into switch companies. He was hustled off the 18th green at Muirfield last year by the FBI and investigated for insider trading. Plus, he was tied to known gambler Billy Walters. Now we have Phil's name connected with a convicted gambler and money launderer. Sounds to me like Phil needs to reevaluate his Christmas card list, Carlos. Well, anyhow, that... what were you going to say?
Yes, go ahead. No, you were going to say, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, that ends the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network for Tuesday, June 14th. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Redwin. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. In addition to their excellent product line, they offer commissions on their sales. They have a director's program. You can set up your own pro shop, sell to your buddies, make a few bucks while you're doing. It's a great deal. Check out their discounts and opportunity. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com and check it out. Carlos, back to you, sir.
And that will wrap up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Now, don't go anywhere, because right now we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll have our VIP, very important guest of the week, which is legendary Oakland Country Club head pro, Bob Ford. You don't want to miss it, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. And that is none other than legendary Oakmont Country Club head pro Bob Ford. And Fred, what do we have in this interview?
Well, as you know, Carlos, Bob Ford first arrived at Oakmont as a 19-year-old in 1973. He just stuck around for 42 years and has been the head pro for 37 of those years. Oakmont is recognized as one of the most difficult golf courses for its members and the touring professionals when they visit there every 10 years or so. Oakmont will host its ninth U.S. Open this week, and Bob Ford has been there for five of them. He even qualified to play a couple of them. We were lucky enough to have Bob on the show last year, and he was kind enough to come back and talk to us about the 116th U.S. Open to be held at Oakmont. His last as a head professional there, he's going to retire after this week, Carlos.
So let's play it.
We would love to welcome Bob Ford, the longtime head professional at Oakmont, who has a winter gig at Seminole in Florida. And, of course, Oakmont will be the site of the 2016 U.S. Open next week. Bob, you have been at Oakmont for nearly 40 years. You started in 1973, right before the U.S. Open then. What's some of the most unique things that you have ever seen there at Oakmont in your time?
Well, Freddie, there's been a lot, that's for sure. I think the most unusual thing that's happened here, you know, in my tenure here is the removal of 10,000 to 15,000 trees on the property. I mean, it's actually quite extraordinary that, you know, we've done what we've done, and it looks the way it looks. It's you know, ready for the Open next week, and it's a pretty exciting time.
Other than opening course up, I know guys that have played back before and have gone back there now, you know, it was more like a tree-lined course, and you had to watch where you're hitting it. Now it's kind of open, although the rough is very penal.
Well, yeah, Freddie, you know, the rough has been penal every Open I've been here for, which this will be my fifth one. I mean, the rough here in western Pennsylvania in June is lush, it's long, it's impossible. You're really quite fortunate to find your golf ball and then to be able to get it back to the fairway. Sometimes, many times, you got to go sideways, so the rough is very difficult.
You were there, as I mentioned, in 1973. You witnessed firsthand Johnny Miller's 8-under par 63 in that final round to win the U.S. Open. What do you remember about that day?
Well, Freddie, you know, embarrassingly enough, I was 19. I was still in college, and I, you know, was not very keen on, you know, I was keen on golf, but I wasn't that astute. And when they began putting the numbers up on the leaderboard right outside the golf shop, I said to Mr. Worsham, who'd won an Open, I said, Mr. Worsham, they must have run out of black numbers. All they're putting up for Mr. Miller, red numbers. And he said, no, son, those are birdies. He's going berserk out there. It blew me away. I couldn't believe it.
How many, what kind of numbers, how many spectators are you looking to accommodate this week?
Well, you know, we did 25,000 my first three opens. In 07, once we took out all the trees, they actually jumped it to 35,000. So they jumped it a lot last time we hosted an Open, and they found that it was too many because it's still a pretty small property. And so this year they're going to do 30,000 tickets a day, and I'm sure that they're all sold out. But it's a nice crowd. They actually have 17,000 grandstand seats for
wow.
people to sit in. So it really kind of behooves everybody to pick a spot, sit there, and watch everybody come through and I don't know, go watch it on TV somewhere.
In your time there, you've seen, I think, five major championships plus a U.S. amateur. So you've seen a lot of good golfers come through there over the time. Any one golfer stick out to you? Of course, Arnold Palmer's a local guy. I know he's near and dear to your heart there. Any one round or any one golfer other than Miller in 73 that maybe sticks out to you?
Well, I don't know about one. You know, it still blows my mind that Larry Nelson shot 132 on the weekend in 83. That was pretty extraordinary golf in a U.S. Open. That was also on a fairly soft golf course, which is what they, you know, talk about when Johnny shot his 63. But Lauren Roberts in 94 shot 64 on Saturday on a dry, hard, fast golf course, which I thought was pretty extraordinary, you know, as far as a one round. But I would tell you, you know, with Jack and Arnold and all the great players that have played here, I've really never seen anybody play like Tiger Woods played in 07. And, you know, he lost by a shot, didn't make one putt in four rounds over 11 feet, if you can imagine that. No chip ins, no bunker ins, not one putt over 11 feet. Are you kidding me? And lost by one shot?
Yeah.
His ball striking that week was just, you know, you can't compare eras. You know, you can't compare Nicklaus and Hogan and Palmer and Miller and Els and all the eras that we've gone through. You can't compare them because of the equipment today, you know, the equipment that Tiger got to use in his career has been so extraordinary. But he was far and above just phenomenal watching him hit the golf ball.
You mentioned Jack Nicklaus. He said last week at the Memorial that if Oakmont Greens get to 13.5 or 14 on the step meter, some players will never finish. What are the greens looking like this week?
Well, they're going to be 14.5 is the goal from the USGA.
Wow.
That's what they were in 07. I mean, they were extraordinary, and the weather was extraordinary in 07. And they're very good now. You know, we just need a little help from the weather. The more moisture we get from rain, the softer and slower they get, which, you know, makes them much easier. But we're hoping for some hard, fast conditions this week and see what the boys can do.
Oakmont has a reputation as being one of the most difficult clubs in the country, and the members take pride in the fact that it plays difficult even for them every day. Most clubs make the course a little softer for their members, but the Oakmont membership does not want a softer version of the course. That's what I hear. Is that correct?
Well, Freddie, it is. I know it's kind of a staggering feeling because most people like to, you know, enjoy their golf, and not that we don't here at Oakmont, but, you know, the lure is that they can come and play the Oakmont or the Open here any day if they have problems at the current site, and that, you know, we got to cut the rough when the Open comes, and we got to, you know, slow the greens down, which is where it's all good stories, and we're sticking to it. But the facts, I'm not so sure about the facts. But they like to be tortured. They like to torture their guests. And, you know, you want to come play the hardest golf course in the world, you come to Oakmont.
Well, that's what I hear, and I understand Jason Day was talking a little bit about the course. I think he played it back in 2006 or sometime like that when he was still an amateur. He said it was one of the most difficult tracks he had ever played. And I know he said he was going to look you up this week. Rory, I think, had said he had a time schedule with you for later in the week this week, and I think even Jordan Spieth was going to try and spend some time with you. So you're going to be a busy guy this week.
Well, it's all fun. You know, all those kids you mentioned are just great young stars, and they're great, you know, they're great guys. And Adam Scott, additionally, you know, it's fun being with them. I'll tell you one thing, they don't need much help from me. They're so good at what they do, and they pick up pretty quick on where to hit it, where not to hit it. You know, as you've watched golf on television, nobody's in that great of control of their golf ball that they can do that, but they certainly know what they're trying to do, and it's just going to be really fun to watch it unfold.
You've been one of the few golf pros, golf professionals that have made the cut and been low pro in U.S. Opens at your course, the home club professional. Mentioned in the same breath with Claude Harmon, that's pretty good company, Bob. And I understand you attempted to qualify again this year.
I did. You know, I shot 74 in the local and wasn't very successful, so I'm in the right place. In my office. But,
that's still pretty strong, buddy.
It's been fun. Been fun trying, that's for sure.
So you're going to retire from Oakmont. You're going to kind of slow down a little bit here. What are you looking forward to doing? You got any plans?
Freddie, I do. You know, I'm going to continue to work at Seminole 7 months, so it's not like I'm retiring from the profession, and in the off months, I'm going to come to Oakmont and enjoy myself, sleep in a few weekends, and take some holidays off, and play with the members, and do some traveling out of here. There's a few places I haven't been that I want to go to, and now I'll be able to go and not feel guilty about not being here.
Well, we certainly congratulate you on a great run at Oakmont, one of the premier jobs in the country, along with Seminole, and we wish you a great week this coming week for the U.S. Open.
Freddie, you're great. I appreciate it very much, and hope everybody enjoys it.
There you have it. That was Bob Ford, the legendary head pro there at Oakmont Country Club. And Fred, what is that 14 is going to be a centimeter there? What do they want? I mean, are they torturing these players? Oh, my God, that's going to be so fast. But there's a forecast that there's going to be some rain for Thursday, so that could rain, that could, you know, wrench that. But we'll talk a little bit more about the U.S. Open. But anything else you want to add about this Bob Ford interview?
Yeah, just to answer you real quick, it was reported that they had him at 16 yesterday. 16, that's like unheard of. I played a course over the weekend that was at 12, probably maybe pushing 13. And if you were above the hole, I mean, you couldn't stop it by the hole. It was 6-7 feet by. So I don't know how these guys are going to play on these greens, because there's a lot more undulation on these greens than the ones I played on. I was watching Robert Streb and Jim Furyk chipping onto the 17th green today for a little bit, and they were chipping from the deep rough in front of the green. And if they were on the left side of that green, it slopes hard from right to left, the ball would not stay on the green. It just rolled over into the fringe or even down into the bunker there. It's unbelievable. And I did want to mention real quick, too, that Bob Ford will be on the Fox sports coverage of the U.S. Open this weekend. So you can catch Bob on Fox this weekend, Carlos.
All right. That's going to be great. I mean, having his insight, of course, being there for 35 U.S. Opens and for so long, I mean, that's going to be great insight from him. Well, let's take our final short break, and when we come back, we have what you've been waiting for. Yes. The wall-to-wall preview for the U.S. Open. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our wall-to-wall preview of the U.S. Open. And let me tell you, let me start by saying, you know, the toughest week on tour is back. And the world's best have all traveled to Oakmont Country Club in Pennsylvania for the 2016 U.S. Open. Last year, Jordan Spieth, he managed to win his second consecutive major with a fantastic one-shot victory at the Tricky Chambers Bay. He was, of course, helped out by a short miss from Dustin Johnson, but he won nevertheless. This year's U.S. Open has been played at Oakmont Country Club, where narrow fairways, thick rough, and lightning-fast greens mean that 5-over par, the score with which Angel Cabrera won the tournament when it was played here in 2007, will surely have a chance as the USGA sets out to make their national championship as demanding and tough as possible this season, with heavy rough lining fairways that lead to super quick greens with severe slopes. So hitting the fairways this week so as to be able to get the ball onto the greens in the correct spot is going to be vital. The big three of Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Rory McIlroy are the favorites with the ones who make bets, but there are plenty of others who can take the win given this condition. It's known as a war of attrition and a game of patience where accepting your fate is key, but this week's U.S. Open at Oakmont ups the ante. The storied venue outside Pittsburgh hosts a record 9th U.S. Open and provides a brutal backdrop for the U.S. second major. This club is often called the hardest golf course in golf, and the tournament will be packed with compelling storylines. This week is going to be a very long week for the players as they come up against incredibly challenging conditions and a course set up to trip them. The world's top three players, like I said, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy, they're going to resume their battle for supremacy, all hoping to add to their major holes and enhance their status in the history of the games. Or it could surprise Master Champions. Danny Willett prove he's not a one major wonder? Or will another unsung player step into the limelight? We'll talk about them and others later, but for now, friend, what's your take on the U.S. Open? I mean, will Altmont live up to its roguish reputation?
Short answer to that is yes, Carlos, it will. I don't care if it rains. It's not going to rain that much, I don't think. Be some passing thunderstorms. This place is it's firm, and it's beyond fast. It's really – the USGA has it exactly like they would want it if the tournament could start today with no more rain. It's right where they want it right now. Some of the storylines, Carlos, that I think are important to watch this week, of course, the broadcasting team. You know how we cast the game at Fox Sports last year for their coverage at out at Chambers Bay. It was just absolutely god-awful terrible. They've made some changes, and I think they've immediately made some good changes. Curtis Strange was added as an on-course announcer, and Paul Azinger replaced Greg Norman and will join Brad Faxon and Joe Buck in the anchor booth. I think those are great ads for Fox. With both Strange and Azinger, Fox has gotten some experienced professionals that will get it right the first time. They even, as I mentioned, Bob Ford's going to set in and offer local knowledge and insight about Oakmont of all the years that he's been here, and that was a great move, I think. That's outstanding. I expect much better from the Fox Sports team this time around. They were much better for the fall ball event last month. You've got, this week, you've got 156 of the best golfers in the world right now. There were around 10,000 entrants, teed it up in special qualifiers at 10 spots in the U.S. and two more internationally. You got, as you mentioned, the big three plus Ricky. Of the big three, if Jason Day is healthy, which he's got a cold, but I don't think it's going to be a problem for him, you got to give him really good odds of winning. He's strong enough to handle Oakmont's devilish rough. He maybe has, if not the best, one of the best short games among those other four, three players. You know, it's just, you know, it's going to be a toss-up. Rory can win anywhere. It really depends on his temperament, on how well he's hitting his driver. I'm going to talk about his presser here in a little bit. Jordan showed last year he can win anywhere and should contend this week by playing well at Chambers Bay. He won the Masters. He played well in the Open Championship. Then he turned around and played well at Whistling Straits. So he can play anywhere if he's on. And then Ricky won the Scottish Open last year on a very difficult golf course, Galan. You know, he was top five in four majors in 2014, and he feels right now that he's in great shape. His putting has been a little bit down, which has affected his long game, but, you know, he thinks he's gonna be all right. Retief Goosen was a special invite. If you remember, Goosen has won two U.S. Opens, and so they invited him back one more time. It's going to have an exciting hole, the 300-yard par 3. It can play anywhere from about 280 to, I think, 305 or something like that. Longest par 3 in U.S. Open history. The rough is what makes it difficult to see your ball, let alone try to hit it. we talked about Jack Nicklaus's quote about the greens at 13.5 or 14. There, I don't know if you saw it or not, Carlos. Ron Green wrote a piece in this week's Global Golf Post. And let me read you a quote from that. It links talking about Oakmont, okay? The course would walk like Angel Cabrera. Its masculinity percolating in the summer air. Oakmont is unforgivingly difficult. A champion of double bogeys and broken spirits. It has dungeons for bunkers, a jungle of tangled rough, and greens that could put the fear of four-putting into Steve Stricker. That is outstanding. I saw Ron today. I said, "Where did you come up with this?" He said, "Once in a while, the words just come to you." I thought that was really great writing. If you get a chance, Everyone should go to Global Golf Post. It came out on Monday. Just click on globalgolfpost.com and read Ron Green's article about Oakmont. It really, really is a good article. Phil Mickelson said, I really think it is the hardest course we have ever played. Ron Green in the article also cautioned the USGA not to take Oakmont too far to get over the edge. If the course is too difficult, the play becomes tedious. It's not fun to watch. The history is here, Carlos. This is the ninth U.S. Open hosted here. They feel like Oakmont is the real thing of U.S. Opens. This is where they can almost hold it here every year. They really believe this is what they want. It also has hosted three PGAs, two U.S. Women's Opens, and five U.S. Amateurs. It's 113 years old. It's 7,200 yards, a par 70. Jason Day was saying today that, and Rory was saying, it really doesn't play that long, though. You're hitting, they're only going to hit, I think, four drivers maybe, maybe on the two par fives, maybe a couple of the long par fours. They're going to be hitting three woods and two irons off the tees to keep it in the fairway. And even then, even on the long hole, 480-yard par fours, they're going to have eight irons into the green because of the firm, fast fairways. And the way that the green, the way the course rolls and slopes, you've got to play to the front of the green or run it up. You don't have, you're not carrying it all the way to the back of the green, so it loses some yardage that way also. There were 27 spots earned in qualifying last Monday. They also gave another six spots. Well, Will McGurk earned a spot, and then they gave five more spots to players who were from qualifiers, and those were, let me get this right here, you've got Zach Edmondson, Tony Finau, Kevin Foley, Daniel Summerhays, and Mike Van Sickle. Mike Van Sickle is the son of Gary Van Sickle, who writes for ESPN. Mike has been a really good player here in Pennsylvania, won the U.S. Amateur, the Pennsylvania Amateur, and some tournaments here in Pennsylvania. And his father, Gary, also has qualified for the U.S. Open in the past. So that's a real golfing family. A couple guys not here, Tiger Woods, Darren Clark, Tongkai Jaidi withdrew. So that let a couple more guys in. And Carlos, I'm going to turn it back to you to see if there's anything you want to talk about. But I have a summary of the a summary real quick of some of the press conferences today and also my picks. So I didn't know if there's something else you wanted to talk about before I go on to that stuff.
No, I if you want, go ahead and give us the summary of today's pressers, and then I'll introduce a part of our picks, and with that we conclude our preview. So go ahead and do the pressers, and then we go to our picks.
As I'm going through this, see if you can pick out a recurring theme here. Jason Day said attitude. You can't let or can't fret over a one bad lie or a missed putt. You have to embrace the challenge. You're going to get bad. You're going to get bad breaks in this golf course. It's going to happen. Things are just going to get out of control. You have to embrace it and just look at the next shot. He said about stress, he feels the most stress in his life, trying to stay number one, meet people's expectations, practice to stay number one and not let these guys pass him. And it is affecting his health. He's been struggling with a cold, and so he realizes he's got to take it easy. He's got to let some of that stuff go. He's taken some time off. You know, he took those 3 months off at the end of the year. He said that was great. He only played golf one time in those 3 months. And that was just four or five holes that he had to go do for a sponsor's requirement to fulfill that, and that's all he played. So he still feels really fresh, and he feels good. He's going to take at least a month and a half off this fall before he goes down to Australia and plays down there. He says right now, he's playing with more focus than he's ever had before. He's probably only going to hit driver on four holes. He's going to use his two iron. He knows he's going to have a little bit longer shot to the green, but that's much better than trying to hit it from the rough. It just can't be done. His single focus right now is on the process, and he still wants to win more tournaments. Jordan Spieth, Oakmont, lived up to all the hype. This he saw it for the first time this week. He's been using a local caddy for practice rounds, which has helped a lot. The bunkers are extremely penal. You cannot go on the bunkers. Many times you just have to hit that sideways. You can't advance the ball down the fairway if you go in the bunkers. He said also he's not going to need many drivers. Word patience, he used the word patience a lot in his interview. The other guys also said that. You have to take what the course gives you. You can't press. You can't try to catch somebody. If you look at the leaderboard and somebody says, you just got to keep doing what you're doing and keep your head in the game. Ricky Fowler, ball striking, extremely important this week. You got to find the fairway. Let's see. He's been playing practice rounds with Rory. They have become good buddies. They have been playing also together down at home in Jupiter, Florida. He says, tee to green, his game is as good this year as it's ever been, but he's just not been making the putts. It's been a little bit frustrating. It has crept back into his long game a little bit. He's got to get through that. He feels good about this week. And I kind of like him this week a little bit. I'll talk about that later. He said, again, attitude, a very good attitude this week. You have to accept bogeys. Patience is the key. Let's see. He feels like his top fives in the four majors in 2014, plus his wins last year at the Players and Sawgrass, his next step now is to win a major, and that's what he's trying to do. Let's see. They asked him about his using social media and Snapchat to stay in touch with fans. He said he really likes to do that. He enjoys it. He thinks his fans like it. And it helps them connect and feel that they feel like they're involved in what's going on. And he also said that right now the top players are all good friends, Rory, Jordan, Jason, and Ricky, and they're feeding off each other's competition, and they like that. They're enjoying it. So they're having a good time at it. And then finally, Rory. You've got Rory said, Oakmont is just a great test of golf. Every shot creates a pressure that you have to make sure that your consequence of your miss, that you could still do something with it. You have to be on point with every shot. You know, he made the point that at Augusta, the greens at Augusta are just as difficult as the greens here. The thing at Augusta is if you roll off a green there, you still have a shot. You can do something with it. It's not a big, tall rough. Here, if you roll off the green, you're down in thick, matted rough, you know, 3-4 inches deep that you can't do anything with. That's the difference, and you just have to avoid that at all costs. While other guys use the word patience, Rory talked about discipline, to not press and stay within your game plan. He also, they asked him about feeling stressed, if he's stressed. Rory said, I don't feel stressed. Be worried. He just tries to win. You know, he just tries to win golf. He's not worried about being number one, number five, number four. He's just trying to win golf tournaments. He said, you know, mental capacity, mental fitness might be the most important factor this week. You got to keep calm and you got to stay composed. That's easy to say. And of course, there's no water around here for him to throw any clubs in, so maybe we'll be okay. And he said the course gives you a lot of options, so it makes it confusing for the player. You have to really be set on what you're trying to do and really buy into the shot that you want and really commit to it. And he was saying, even if it rains, the course is still going to be very difficult. It's still going to be very fast. It's just not going to, you know, it's still so firm, it's just not going to get that soft. And even if it does rain, the green, the rough's going to get even that more thick. Now, since it's wet and it'll grow faster and they won't be able to mow it, so it'll be even tougher. So Carlos, that was kind of a real recap, real quick recap of the press conferences today from the four top players there.
Well, let me tell you one thing. The U.S. Open time is also time for predictions, or should I say speculations. I mean, can anybody predict the winner of a golf tournament, especially something as big and volatile as the U.S. Open? It's impossible unless you're the Long Island Medium or the woman who predicted Johnny Miller's victory to know who the winner of the 2016 U.S. Open will be. But the history of the golf course and the winners in the past gives us some clues. I mean, some of the greats of the game, even if they were not great yet when they won the title, won at Oakmont. The list of legendary U.S. Open champions starts with Tommy Armour in 1927, goes on to include Ben Hogan in 53, Nicklaus in 62, Johnny Miller in 73, Larry Nelson in 83, Ernie Els in 94, Angel Cabrera in 2007. So the question is, who is going to win the U.S. Open this year? But I have the surefire answer. Oakmont. That's who? The Oakmont.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the one who's going to win. There will
that's
be
it.
New wet numbers on Sunday's final leaderboard. Okay, that's how it's going to be. But we have to try to pick about the humans. So let's say, you know, let's start, I mean, with the four top tens and the five U.S. Opens a year.
Hey, Carlos?
Yes.
Hey, Carlos? Before we get to our picks, do you want to, because this ties in real nice with talking about the course. Jay Flemmel made some points about the course and a couple of the holes.
Yes.
Did you want to play that quick, or do you want to give our
picks
now?
Yeah, let's do that. Yes, let's do it then. Let's do it now. Okay, let's put Jay Flemmel.
Jay is a golf writer for Golf News Net. He also has a radio show, Jay's Place, and he's been to a host of major championships. He's a golf historian. He knows the stuff inside and out. He's always a lot of fun to listen to and follow. So I talked to him a little bit today, and we taped this quick segment all about Oakmont just real briefly.
Let's play it.
We are here at the U.S. Open at Oakmont Country Club just outside of Pittsburgh, and we just happened to be talking to Jay Flemma, who is a golf writer for Golf News Net. Ryan Blanche is also a good friend of our show, and Jay is a great writer and also does Jay's Place on radio. And so, Jay, we're really happy to welcome you to the Back Nine Report.
Thanks, Fred. It's really great to be on your show. Everybody, you're listening to the best show on the airwaves.
Well, I don't know about that, but we try. Hey, what brings you to the U.S. Open? What are you looking for? What are you thinking? What are you seeing around here? Pretty good buzz going around here.
Well, it's my 12th U.S. Open, and I've covered now 25 majors, and of all the places I've been, Oakmont is my absolute favorite. I fell in love with it when I saw what they did cutting down all of the trees 9 years ago, how it looked like a great grassy ski slope, but even better was how it played. Cutting down all the trees brought the conditioning back. It cleared out a lot of airspace for the players to be able to have more options from various points in the fairway. And you can see long views across the property. So it plays fantastic like it did in the Golden Age, and it looks even better than it did when it was covered in trees.
You've been here so many times. What are some of the holes? What are some of the things that you look for here? What are some of the things that are going to be key come the weekend?
Well, everyone's going to start with 17, a short par 4, but very dangerous, guarded by Big Mouth, a huge, yawning chasm of a bunker. That bunker has caused a lot of people a lot of trouble, and that hole's cost a few people the U.S. Open. Jim Furyk faltered there in 2006, and most infamously, Phil Hodges might have won the 1962 Open, which resulted in a battle between Palmer and Nicklaus in a playoff, but he took an 8 on that hole when he drove into a tree trying to drive the green and then tried to play the ball out of the tree.
Yeah, around here you can't take any risks, can you? You just got to take your medicine, get the ball back and play.
And that's one of the bigger problems, too, is that your medicine is going to be castor oil. If you get in one of those fairway bunkers, the best you can do to get out is advance it maybe 150 yards. They are deep, penally deep. And then if you're not in one of those, it could be the rough. So if the thunder don't get you, then the lightning will. And even then, the adventure's not done when you get to the greens because, much like Augusta, they have a number of different slopes and hollows and swales. You know, you could have a 10-foot putt with 10 feet of break.
Give me one or two names that you're watching that you're thinking could have a good week this week.
My number one pick is Rory McIlroy because he's the most well-rounded of all of the long hitters. You're going to need length here. Not too much. There's a couple of short holes, but you're still going to need a lot of length. I think that Jason Day is going to be in the mix. We'll see if his strength and his increased body mass from all the exercising at the gym might give him an advantage a la Angel Cabrera back in 07. You know, Cabrera only hit 5 out of 14 fairways, yet shot 69. That's the stat of a guy that normally shoots 79, but that's what happens with Mike Davis's graded rough. Also, keep an eye out on Louis Westhuizen. He plays great in big moments.
Well, Jay, it's been a pleasure talking to you and finally meeting you here, and we hope you have a great week here at Oakmont.
Fred, thanks for having me on the show, everybody. We're going to have Fred on the Jay's Place show later on, so check in with that as well. And check in at golfnewsnet.com for Ryan Ballengee and all the rest of the crew. Have a great week, everybody.
There you have it. I was entertainment lawyer and sports writer for Golf Newsnet, Jay Flama. And Fred, just like he gave us his picks, now we have to give ours. What do you think? Let me start.
You will not believe mine, Carlos. You go ahead and do yours. Mine are completely off the charts, so you're not going to believe mine. Let's see.
I'm going to first talk about the top players, and then I'll tell you about mine. But of course, okay. We have to talk about that. But with four top 10 finishes and 5 years open and a near flawless game, which includes magical touch around the greens, Jason Day is the man to beat. I mean, as he seeks to double his major tally and win for the fourth time this season, he's probably the best player in the world right now. He absolutely has the game to contend at Oakman. He's long, complete player with major championship trophy already, so he's definitely the man to beat. But, hey, Jordan Spieth, the defending champion, he returned to the winner's circle like Colonial a few weeks back. He uses class. I mean, his matters are dismantled. He's not long, but he's efficient. It should be not underestimated that he would be one of the most prepared players on the grounds. His iron play was poor at Muirfield Village last time while he had the added pressure of defending the title he won in such dramatic fashion a year ago, so it's going to be a little difficult this time. Rory McIlroy, since his win at Congressional in 2011 U.S. Open, I've been of the opinion that he may be the only player in the game that can win a major championship off the tee. He did it again at Kiawah Island in the PGA Championship. Oakmont is the kind of course he can eliminate 95% of the field if he can dominate the tee shot. The putter could become a concern, but I would submit that getting on the dance floor is much more than half the battle this week. He still has to prove he can tough out and win it in likely over par total. Ricky Fowler, well, similar to this previous that I talked, he can really get it done off the tee as an afterthought. I checked his stats and off the tee and saw he was fifth on tour. The eye test told me as much, but he's also a big stage player. He's had such success across the board in the majors, won the players, and done everything short of winning a major championship. It wouldn't be a surprise to anyone if he dramatically accomplished that breakthrough on a golf course like Oakmont stature. Hendrik Stenson is another eye test guy. I can close my eyes and see him pounding that three with 300 yards off every tee box and splitting most fairways. The most dangerous thing for Stenson will be his temper. He's known for having an explosive personality towards his clubs, and not as much as Rory when he throws them to the water, but, you know, the rough at Oakmont will challenge that. DJ, oh my God, he's been so close in U.S. Open before. It's not so more than last year where he had a putt to win the championship. He's hitting the ball as well as anyone and can keep it out of the fixed half. He can blast it off the tee, and he should be among the contenders. About Hideki Matsuyama, how can I forget about him? I'm very excited for his chances. He already won the season in the American and had 5 top 10s in total. He has the games that last the rest of the field here. I have to talk about my man, my young guy, Matthew Fitzpatrick, I mean, the young Englishman. He's very straight off the tee, and that should keep him in a good place this week. He won just a fortnight ago and also had a top 10 at the Masters, so look out for Matthew Fitzpatrick. Shane Lowry, this Irishman, puts in a gut show in the U.S. Open last season. He finished 9th. He also has a win on the WGC event since. He's one of the best drivers in tour, and perhaps, vitally, he's also someone who will never give up. But now, the players that I want to pick. I'm going to start by filmmaker. I have to go with him. He has famously never won a U.S. Open,
but he has 6 second place finishes. Suddenly looks to be a bang in form going into this event with a second place finish this past weekend at St. Jude Classic. Could it finally be his year? He's inside the top 5 in the PGA Tour in putting this season and was 2nd in Memphis on Sunday, and may be able to follow a similar path to glory and complete the career Grand Slam 3 years from his Open Championship win. Almost all of his strong performances in this event, including the 4 runner-up finishes, have come in this part of the U.S., and he'll be raring to go, having really found some confidence over the last 2 events. He's striking it brilliantly in Ohio before holding almost everything last week. This other pick you will never expect it, and this is former FedEx Cup winner Billy Horschel. He had started to rediscover his scoring touch on the back of a disappointing last year, which followed him from that brilliant $10 million triumph in the autumn of 2014, when for a time he looked like the best player on the planet. But now with 12 cuts made in a row, that's a streak that only 2 players can better. It's a matter of time before he goes really close again, and this demanding T2 green test should suit one of the PGA Tour's best ball strikers. He has already posted 3 top 10s this season. 3 years ago, he led the U.S. Open at halfway, having hit 18 greens out of 18 in the second round at Marion, and that helps indicate you what he can do when everything is clicking, and it seems like he is starting to click at all cylinders. I have Matt Kuchar to talk about. He could also give the fans something to chat about, as he's one of the top 8 players right now in the world, with 4 top 6 finishes in a row and 6 top 10s in his last 8. Kuchar is back to his very best and can strongly be fancied by build on a very good U.S. Open record, which includes 6 cuts made now in a row dating back to 2010. He has finished inside the top 6 in his past 4 starts. So granted that he doesn't always finish the job off when he's in the mix, but an ace short game and confidence with the driver, this really could be the week to add a major to his player championship and those titles. And finally, Fred, Australia's Mark Leishman. He's a strong contender. His 3 top 5 finishes in the majors show that Mark Leishman can peak for the big event. And while the U.S. Open record is fully average, this course should suit this player with no obvious weaknesses, and who secured a really impressive win at the end of 2015. 2 quiet top 15 finishes, Fred, serve as a lovely preparation for him, and he could sneak under the radar and into contention.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you talk about a lot of guys here. Let me just a couple real quick. I'm going to talk about Phil Mickelson later, so I'm not going to talk about him. But do you know where he's at tonight? You know what he's doing tonight? Flew back to California for the graduation of, you know, for end of school thing for his daughter, and they'll fly back later tonight. He'll be hearing back in the morning. So, Dad of the Year award there. Kuchar, nice pick. I love Kuchar. You know, he just hasn't seemed to have it this year, just not been quite on point, but maybe. Standing right beside Mark Leishman today on the range, watching him hit some balls. You know, Rory was asked about, you know, when he won his majors, they've been basically on soft golf courses. He doesn't play firm and fast as well. So if this is firm and fast, it might be a feather in his cap if he can win here, because he's not won on that kind of golf course. Jordan Spieth, he's always cool. He's a thinking man's game. You know, this is his kind of golf course. I look for him to be a factor all week. Jason Day, he's earned the right to be a favorite. He's number one in the world, no question about it. But, Carlos, I'm going to go a completely different way here. You know, as I said earlier, the short game is going to dictate the winner of this thing. Much like we saw Zach Johnson at the Open last year, remember, everybody was playing on an even playing field because it was so hard and so fast. Everybody's sitting from the same place. So if you give the guy who's the best short game guy in the world from 100 yards in 72 holes, you know, he's going to come out the winner. So, as I mentioned, let's talk a little bit about Phil Mickelson. He's got a pretty good short game. He's not been playing too bad this year. You know, I don't know if I can pick Phil to win, but I really feel he's got a pretty good shot of maybe breaking through and getting that first U.S. Open win. Although, I think his putting is still just a little suspect. I don't think he putts quite good enough, and I think these grass greens will expose him on that. So, looking back, okay? Yes, Bobby Jones, Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, and Johnny Miller 1 year. Long hitters all. No question about it. But since 1978, short hitters with excellent short games have won 4 of the 7 national championships contested at Oakmont. John Mahaffey, Larry Nelson, Patty Sheehan, and Paula Kramer. They're never going to be confused with Dustin Johnson or Bubba Watson. Therefore, I have a couple surprise picks for you that come in completely under the radar. As I mentioned, Zach Johnson, short game wizard. And there's also a local guy from here, Jimmy Furyk. He might, you know, he's been coming back. He's over his injury. He's kind of fresh because he had some time off last year and earlier this year. The course is firm and fast. Even if it rains on Wednesday or Thursday, it's still going to be pretty firm. And the long hitters and the high flyers are not going to be able to hold these greens in the fairways. Furyk and Zach Johnson are grinders. That is what this U.S. Open will require. Plus, as I said, Furyk's from here. He grew up here, used to playing around here. I watched him a little bit today. I just feel good about it. And my third guy, Carlos, I like Ricky Fowler because I like his tenacity. I like that he can win on different kind of golf courses. I think a hard golf course will suit him. I think he thinks his way around the golf course pretty well. I like Ricky, Zach, and Jimmy Furyk this week, Carlos.
All right, so those are great picks. There you have them. That's our wall-to-wall preview for this week, and we don't have much time to keep going on it, so we have about 3 minutes to go, so I'm going to go quickly on my final pods. I'm just going to say, you know, Chael Houston has plans to drop its title sponsorship of the Houston Open after next year's tournament after being the sponsor since 1992. So there is some things. The Houston Business Journal reports that Bruce Culpepper, the president of Chael Oil Company, says that it's due to an employee's downturn in the energy business, while Steve Sims, the president of the Houston Golf Association, tells that things changed this time around. So there's so much more to it, but at least they're working on getting a new sponsor. And finally, Glenavy may be threatened by bulldozers, but that's still considered safe place for the Canadian Open. So Glenavy Golf Club will host the 2017 RBC Canadian Open for a record 29th time next year.
Yeah, just a couple things real quick, Carlos. Women's golf they held last Tuesday was a rousing success. It was held at over 400 golf facilities in 27 countries. Lisa Garbier said they were able to fulfill their mission, engage, empower, and support women and girls through golf. So they were pretty happy with the way that turned out. And the USGA is going to use new data technology to better inform and unite golfers. It's about time. Nobody's going to confuse the USGA with their being ahead of things with technology, but they're on the right track, and we can talk more about this on another show, Carlos.
Oh, hey, one more thing, Carlos.
One important thing here. There was no Donald Trump news tonight, so Kieran's going to be very happy.
No way. This is something. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong. We'll get you some news. Back Niners, this wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you thanks to our VIGs, very important guests of the week, Bob Ford and Jace Lehman. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fernando Vader. We wish to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.